Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Cynthia Dearen, and this is the Business Beyond Borders podcast. I created this show to inspire and motivate entrepreneurs and business owners who want to expand their company internationally and make a bigger impact in the world. Today, I'm talking to Doyle Bueller, otherwise known as the Digital Dude. Doyle is an author, entrepreneur, speaker, and online business strategist. He's also the founder of The Digital Delusion, a digital and marketing company that helps entrepreneurs accelerate their business, drive demand, and build engagement. Doyle has consulted, coached, taught, and inspired clients around the world in the areas of digital leadership, online marketing, social selling, social media, and digital strategy. Over the last 15 years, he has grown multiple businesses and startups in Canada, the United States, Europe, and Australia. Doyle published his first book, The Digital Delusion, How to Overcome the Misguidance and Misinformation Online in 2014, and he's just released his new book, Unleash Your Remarkable Brand Value, Influence and Authority. We'll be talking about those today. Doyle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. Pleasure to be here.
Now, where are you joining us from today?
Well, have you ever looked at that book called Where's Waldo?
I have.
Oftentimes I get asked that, but I'm usually easy to spot because I'm pretty tall, pretty big, and have a very large head of hair and head. but I'm actually in Perth right now at the moment. So yeah.
And you travel around quite a lot. So do you ever wake up and wonder where you are?
I do sometimes. Yes. It's like you have to get the conscious gears going. Goes, where did I go to sleep?
Okay. Now just tell us briefly, because people are now probably wondering, because I've mentioned it, you do split your time. What are the different locations where you mainly are?
Typically, as you can tell from my accent, I'm Canadian, not American, as most people would allude to. So I originate from Canada, as I like to affectionately call it. But I spend time between Australia and Canada and the US as well, fairly regularly. So,
So it's
just a matter of deciding when to be at any specific location and kind of working from there for a while too. It's not just hop over for a couple of weeks. It's we'll stay here and keep things growing.
And what usually determines where you're going to be? How do you make that call about where you're going to wind up for a period of time?
It does depend on, you know what? That's a good question. It's you kind of need some stability as well to say, okay, we're going to go to New York, for 3 months, or we're going to go to Montreal for 3 months or that sort of thing. So it's really more of just how I see it is setting up a base and saying, okay, yes, Manhattan for these 3 months, and then Montreal for these 3 months, and then Australia for, these three months or 6 months or whatever the case may be. So I use it more sort of like an operating field, I guess, would be a good way of describing it.
So you have really got the nomadic entrepreneurial lifestyle going on.
Yeah. The digital nomad, as they say. But the difference is that there is obviously a purpose to it as well. It's not just wandering around. And going to these cities and these places is, they have to be, because it's business too, right? You have to be very disciplined to say, okay, I need to get out. I need to network. I need to connect with people on LinkedIn. However it is, call up old contacts, do some speaking, do some workshops, all of those things are super important. You can't just kind of show up and expect things to happen.
Yeah. Let's go back in time. Have you always been an entrepreneur? I mean, what were you like as a kid?
Good question. You'd probably have to ask my mom. I was a little bit curious, adventurous. I was kind of the first, in Canada we have the snow during the winter. So, I was kind of the first kid down the hill with this toboggan or sled, as we call them. Pretty adventurous. I mean, I would do sort of my own thing. I would create my own stuff and honestly enjoying life. And as I got older, I did start to decide, hey, how do I want to, do I want to start a business? So I did, you know, like jobs, and had like a paint, did some painting and some lawn care as a kid, and newspaper deliveries and all that kind of stuff that a lot of kids do, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Not everybody does, but that was kind of where I started it. To, you know, I created these flyers that went around in my neighborhood when I was about 15 or so to paint their fences and, you know, cut their grass. And I went door to door and, you know, picked up some jobs for that. The work was hard. The easy part seemed to be getting them to say, yeah, because it's like, oh, well, I can hire a 15-year-old.
Yeah. That's easy.
But then when they get you to work, it's like, oh, that is hard work.
And so did you think, when you were young, you know, when you were out there painting people's fences, did you think that you would own an international business one day?
I never really thought of it like that, quite honestly. It was more just, that's a really good question. I'm not sure. I don't think explicitly that I felt that I wanted to run an international business, but at the same time, like there's a lot of indicators along the way. Like at 19, I went hitchhiking across Canada and across Europe. And, you know, I wanted to sort of explore the world and see what was out there, quite honestly. And I felt that that was really important as well. So did I see business? Not necessarily, but at that point, I really had no idea what I wanted to do or how things were going to come together.
But you didn't actually run a business straight off, did you? Because I know that you did a pretty extraordinary thing. You went and became an aeronautical engineer.
Yeah. Well, before that, I was actually a pilot in the Air Force in Canada. And then I went into aeronautical engineering as well and worked in that industry for quite some time. And I mean, from a small, you know, from a teenager, I did enjoy like the engineering, and I was always building airplanes and making them fly. And I think I actually built like a couple of, you know, full size aircraft, or what I thought was aircraft at the time. I think I actually built a hang glider when I was like about 10 years old with like sheets from my mom's closet and a couple of sticks and broom handles and that sort of thing. So aviation's sort of been a big piece of what I've done over the years as well. And that turned into some photography also, but I love engineering. It's very stimulating for the mind. It's also very extremely hard. But it was a lot of fun and very analytical and very mechanical and that sort of thing. So I really enjoyed that. I spent most of the time working with aerospace engines, like turbine engines and that sort of thing. So as a career, that was sort of where I worked for quite a number of years as well. So
how, and I'm pretty sure there are a few steps in the middle, but how did you go from being an aeronautical engineer to running an international digital and marketing agency? How did that happen?
I guess it was just that, I've always sort of enjoyed traveling, and one of the keystone moments in terms of making that decision was I used to fly back a lot between the US and Canada, like every couple of weeks to meet with clients and customers and all that kind of stuff. So it was really a very active role. But I was, you know, just feeling that this is fun. It's interesting, but there was like something missing. It's like, what else can I do that allows me to differentiate myself and allows me to do something unique and different that nobody else is doing, right? And so I was reading Michael Gerber, The E-Myth, on an airplane flight from Winnipeg, for those who are no Canada, from Winnipeg to Indianapolis. And I read the whole book on that flight, and it really blew my mind in terms of putting all those pieces together. And it was really super inspiring because it appealed to sort of that technician side, obviously, of how to organize a business and how to, you know, put these pieces together, but also sort of the business side. It's like, look, there's some amazing things that you can do to be able to do that. So I got back and obviously it took a number of years to do this, but I decided that, hey, I want to get my master's in business. So I worked on that for a couple of years, and in the background, I was developing a business, and I didn't want to, you know, develop something that was just selling something kind of things. I wanted to look at, you know, how could we actually change things, or how could we actually create something that was adaptive and used, you know, was technologically orientated, because I'm, you know, I am a tech person, an engineer, but also something that allows you to kind of get in touch with the customer. So I came up with the help of my partner at the time, which was my brother. We came up with this, this strategy to build some businesses based on this. And that was when I sort of launched one of the first startups in 2002. And it was a tech startup, pardon me. excuse me. It was a tech startup with 3D printing, and using that really on a personalization basis, not just to create artifacts or that sort of thing. It was really, how do we actually create a business model that allows us to create personalized products? And, you know, with that instant gratification type aspect. And that's really what kind of the whole strategy that we built around this. Then we launched, you know, one business and then a second business and that sort of thing. And that's really what got me going, was launching those businesses back then.
And then somewhere in all the middle of that, you also created and ran two pretty successful online magazine, Profit Magazine in Canada and Manitoba Business in the States. How did you do that? How did you manage to do two different startups in different countries at the same time?
those magazines was for an award, just to clarify. I didn't actually run the magazines, but those were because of the startups that I created. We became one of the top 50 fastest growing companies in Canada. And then the following year, one of the fastest growing companies in the state of Manitoba in this case. So it was really taking those ideas, those seeds from 2002 about personalization and customization and instant gratification, and putting some fun into it as well, through 3D printing. We had some pretty cool ideas. That's sort of where the international expansion started. We had to step back though, because 3D, I mean, even today, the 3D printing is still not quite there. And so we were like over a decade ahead of our time, basically. So we kind of had to say, well, how do we actually build in this business over time as well? So it's not just about starting a business. It's how do you see forward to build it over time? And that was one of the key ingredients. So we came up with a concept of skins for portable electronic devices, which were customized. So we built this whole software suite, this designer studio that runs this. Again, this was back in like 2004. So it's similar to what Canva. I was actually playing around with Canva last night. We built that back in 2004, and it was a fantastic interface and one of the first of its kind for custom designing products. And we would then, you'd be able to manufacture the product anywhere around the world. And so I started with some franchises across Canada and into the US, and then started to license it into Europe and then into Australia as well with the skins. And that's sort of where we had the patent for the skin as well. And as a result of this international expansion, we became one of the 50 fastest growing companies in Canada. So yeah, it was quite exciting.
And does that company still exist, or are you still involved with that? What happened? What was the end of that story?
We did hit some really rough water in the GFC in 2009 and 2008, because a lot of our clients were international from the US. Yeah. And a lot of them were sort of seeing our product as, we had a lot of great, fantastic partnerships with Sony Pictures and Walmart. And there's a lot of, I'm trying to think of some of the other major companies, but a lot of the big companies that were in that entertainment area, because our product was fun, it was interesting, it could be customized. So that was, you know, part of our business model was partnering with these Rogers Wireless, Virgin Mobile, Rogers Wireless in Canada. Not that anybody outside of Canada would probably know, but they're the biggest carrier in Canada. But anyway, we hit some rough waters because we set up promotional partnerships with them. We continue to expand into Europe and into Australia. I became, or I in 2011. We kind of closed shop in Canada. The Australian one was still running at that time. I actually haven't kept in touch with them since then, but it's, you know, it's one of those rocky roads that you have your high points and you also have your low points as well. But it was quite exciting because it allowed us, you know, to get into that field and myself to, you know, build up these franchises across Canada and the US and then into Paris where our European licensee was and then into Melbourne where the Australian licensee was. So, yeah, it was a fantastic journey.
So when, you know, when it all got tricky and you kind of moved on from it, looking back, what did you learn about doing business generally or maybe doing business internationally out of that experience?
I think that it's, I mean, what I learned specifically was that, you sort of need to have a core strategy to be able to sort of build that business and make it, you know, give it some legs and that sort of thing. Again, that's sort of a personal choice. We could have just stayed in Canada, you know, within our little geographic area, but I've always sort of thought about, you know, how do we get this out to more people? And that was sort of one of the driving goals of moving it into a digital medium, into online, and then around the world as well, so that if we have those tools that we can actually do, then we're able to do that. And one of the interesting things, you know, related more directly to the question is that we didn't have a business. Like we had a business and we had this fantastic tool. Like we raised, you know, a lot of money and we built up this fantastic interface. And again, this was like customization at its finest. And it was, for those who are in the IT field, like it was designed entirely on Flash, which means that it's hard coded. It's not as custom as HTML and that sort of thing. So it was a very expensive project, and we had this absolutely amazing tool that could do anything. Like you could pull in whatever device you wanted, whether it was, I mean, iPhones were just starting out, but any Samsungs and, you know, game systems and laptops, you could find your specific model and then it would show the actual template of it with the keys cut out and that sort of thing. So that would be the template. And then you can grab pictures and put pictures in it, put your name on it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then we would, it would be sent off to the local, you know, regional distributed licensee, whether that's Canada, US, Europe, or Australia. And then it would be manufactured locally as well. So we built this fantastic system, but it wasn't really a business, right? We still had to do that marketing. Like here's this fantastic tool. How do you actually turn it into a business? So that's, I think, what a lot of businesses get caught up with today is that, yeah, there's so much technology and you can do this and that and all this great stuff, but it's not a fundamental business. And to me, that's the most important ingredient here is that you can have all the flashy technology, but unless you've got a sound business behind it, it's not going to really help. And that's sort of what's driven me in the last, whatever, 7-8 years is how do you actually develop that business behind the technology? You know, how do you connect those pieces? How do you build that strategy that sustains you over time as well? So that's really where I made that shift and decided, okay, yeah, I'll move on from this project. But that's sort of my business goals as to how do you actually build a business in the digital space.
And that is a great segue into my next question, which is about what you are doing now, which is running the Digital Delusion. You started that in 2013, mm-hmm. and we've talked about where you came from, but what was the catalyst? You know, was there a moment where you suddenly thought, I'm going to do this, you know, the Digital Delusion is going to be what it is? Or was there a kind of gradual evolution coming out of the previous business, which hadn't gone quite the way that you wanted, and then over time kind of arriving at this space where you were running this thing called the Digital Delusion?
Yeah. Well, I think I took sort of my technical skills, my engineering skills and my business skills. And I mean, it was, again, one of those, another watershed moment, so to speak, in terms of deciding what needed to happen next type thing. So it really was just sort of deciding of, okay, what, you know, I've been in business for quite some time. I've, you know, been in the leadership role. It's been primarily in the digital space, in the online space. I was taking technology. I was utilizing, how do we actually build a business behind it? And that was sort of where I decided to move forward. I did do a lot of agency work, between those years, with some of the biggest ad agencies around the world, with some of their clients, with paid search, and social media was still just kind of, it was there, but it wasn't quite as aggressive as it is today. SEO, all that kind of stuff. So it was a matter of seeing on a firsthand basis how the industry was actually operating. What were these big companies doing? What were these small companies doing as well? And again, as my engineering brain was ticking over, it's like, man, there's a lot of inefficiencies. There's a lot of wastage here. There was no accountability, and it just boggled my mind, because we would have large budgets of 100,000 plus a month on ad spend, and if they didn't reach the targets, if they didn't get the results that they wanted, what would they do? Well, they'd throw another, $50,000 on the fire, so to speak. So it was quite frustrating. And I was seeing this frustration, not just in the big companies, but in the smaller companies as well. Because there was sort of this big barrier, and not a technological barrier to entry. It was more sort of a business barrier to entry, where anybody could jump into the field, right? You can go set up a business online and you're an online entrepreneur or, whatever. But the point is that a sustainable business? So a lot of people were jumping in, but they're not getting the results, or they don't know how to get the results once they're actually in that field. And again, it wasn't just the small companies, it was the big companies as well. So, how do we make this a lot easier, and how do we make this a lot more sustainable, and how do we make this, a lot more productive? And that's where I came up with the first book, the Digital Delusion, because to me, there were a lot of these myths and misconceptions and misinformation that was out there, that a lot of businesses were just kind of thinking, oh yeah, I'll set up a website and, set up a Facebook page and away we go kind of thing. But it's interesting to see, like today, after the last couple of months with Facebook and, a lot of these publishers dying and a lot of these businesses dying because they've been relying 100% on Facebook in this case. But if they would have set up their strategy, their digital ecosystem, built up this strong platform from the, start, go, then they'd be in a much better position today.
So you describe the Digital Delusion as, and your, the business as an anti-agency.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean? What's your philosophy?
Honestly, it's just a play on words, but what it was just sort of looking at how do we actually, to me, how do you actually help a business out, right? You're not just there to, I'll be perfectly honest, agencies are there. Their business model is to charge, tack on, here's your budget. Okay, here's the total cost. So their business model, it's pretty simple, and it's pretty standard too. It's been around for quite some time. So they tack on a percentage of everything that you spend, right? So what's the motivation there? Well, get your client to spend more. Yeah. Because your revenues go up. Like it's pretty simple business math. But to me, it was like, well, okay, but where's the real value coming from, right? How do you actually make sure that if you are building these pieces of your digital ecosystem, that they're actually working towards that business goal of not just being able to charge your customer more because you've spent more?
I was just going to ask, where were you when you first started the company? Where were you?
I was in Sydney. Physically in Sydney. Yeah. Yeah. So no.
Cause I was trying to work out what you were at some point in the States and Canada. At what point did you arrive in Australia?
Mm-hmm. I arrived in Australia in about 2011. Okay. So yeah. And I did do the agency work out of Australia as well. So yeah.
And then you basically grew the business from there. When you started it, or maybe to put it a different way, when you started the Digital Delusion, was it an international business from day one, or did you start it out of Sydney and then at a particular point in time you thought, I'm going to take this global?
It was more, I mean, I, I've always had aspirations for being around the world, but it was, yeah, originally you have to sort of start within your own space. So you carve out a niche for yourself in that space and then see, okay, well, what can I do next? How do I get to be able to do, you know, create additional opportunities elsewhere? And that's really sort of then that next step. So it's not so much saying, oh yeah, I want to be in, New York or London or wherever the case may be. It's more, you need to have a viable business model first, and you need to be able to make sure that that's working, and then see how you can actually expand and expand. I mean, it's not needed for everybody, right? It's not some businesses that it's sort of a goal of the business. For me, it was to say, okay, well, how do we actually do this, and what pieces do we need in to put into place and that sort of thing. And once you have a general plan, it's not that hard. Like, there are some steps that you have to go through. There are, you know, specific ways and methodologies that you can do it. But it's a matter of starting small, but thinking, is there a possibility here? And in most cases there is, but if there isn't, like, that doesn't, whatever. It's not for everybody, without question, because it is different. It is unstable. There is a lot of, you know, a huge amount of more risk, I guess you could say.
But it is great to hear you say that you think it's manageable, because I know that a key hurdle for a lot of people who are wondering whether they should actually expand their company internationally is really this question of, well, can I do it? You know, this looks like something that other people do. Maybe it's really too difficult. So it's great to hear from somebody who has done this a couple of times across a number of geographies say, actually, you know, if you go about it the right way, then it's really achievable.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it does take time too, right? Like, it's not going to happen overnight. With the earlier company, Mitigo, like, that took years. I can compress it down into, you know, a couple minutes because we're talking about it, but that took a while. Like, you had to find the right partners. You had to find that's where it starts. It's like, where are the people who are interested in this? And usually they have an association for the product or the service at that point in time. And then it, develops into a, you know, partnership and that sort of thing. So it takes some time, but it really primarily starts with people and deciding that, yes, you want to do it. But and it does take a lot of energy as well.
Yeah. Doyle, as you thought about which international markets you were going to go to, what did you look for? You know, as you kind of considered, well, I could go here or here or here, what were the key things that you looked for when making a choice about a market to target?
Honestly, it came down to personal emotions too, right? to some extent. I mean, I mean, a lot of it was just deciding as a person, where do I want to be? What would I like to, where would I like to go? And what would I like to do, you know, in those places? So, for example, Montreal, right? Like, it's a very international city. There's a lot of IT there. There's a lot of startups there. They have a very vibrant startup ecosystem. So it's a fantastic, you know, technology space to be in. And it's also culturally, it's a very unique city as well. And as a Canadian, it's like, I've been there obviously in the past before. So it's a really fun, interesting city. Same with, you know, Manhattan, New York. It's like, I've never lived there before, so I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't mind. So let's go see, you know, what we can do there. And if we can create some great partnerships and businesses and clients, in that area of the world as well. So it really, honestly, the choices were completely personal. It's like, where would we like to go? Where would I like to, you know, start some business and see what we can do? So trying to be adventurous and not kind of sticking in your box as well.
And if you thought about stuff, I mean, not looking backwards because you made your previous choices about where to go based on personal things, but if you were looking for markets to expand to in future, is there anything that you would deliberately avoid?
In terms of location or just?
Yeah, I mean, is there anything as you think about the world and you think, you know, I wouldn't want to go somewhere where fill in the blank?
Yeah, well, I think if it is like, I mean, obviously a lot of what I do is digital online and that sort of thing. So I don't physically have to be in certain locations. as well. But I think that it's really important that if you're going to, would you like to, you know, gain sort of more from the personal side, but would you like to live there and would you like to stay there? So yeah, there's obviously, you know, market conditions and political conditions and, you know, all that kind of stuff that you need to be aware of. Like there are some places that I don't think I would, you know, take the risk for whatever reason, whether it's economic, whether it's political, whether it's, you know, for, is it a great a business economy as well? So personally, I think that those are very, you know, important to look at. I mean, being in, you know, living in Australia and Canada and the US, like you kind of have a sense of, okay, well, you know, where are the good places to go? Where, you know, where is there a vibrant community? Where is there, you know, a lot of activity and that sort of thing? So that's, you know, a primary thing is making sure that can support it as well, that place can physically support it and that there's the, you know, the intellectual property there. There's the people who are making it happen as well. And there's, you know, a lot of activity. Like when I go into a specific city, I do networking events and, you know, the mornings and the afternoons and the evenings and that sort of thing, just to see what kind of people are there. And it's interesting because you can get a good taste of, you know, what's going on and sort of what drives people and that sort of thing. So it's a lot of fun. But it's, you know, it's scary too.
Yeah. on the strategy side, what are the particular strategies that you've used to grow the global footprint? I mean, given the fact that you are now splitting your time between Australia, the States and Canada, how did you kind of get to there from starting in Sydney? You know, what did you do? What route did you take to actually go and get all those clients all around the world?
I was very specific. Like, it's not just, I mean, you do have clients that are prospects that come to you and say, hey, I'm over here kind of thing. And yeah, you'll kind of work through those. But again, it comes down to making a decision in terms of, okay, where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? And then just kind of going through a process of, okay, well, what's there? Who's there? Who do I need to contact? Who can I connect with? And you can quickly see, and again, I've said this earlier, it comes down to a lot of people and partnerships as well. And you can quickly see a simple tool like LinkedIn, right? It's so powerful because it allows you to be able to see who's, you know, who has that ability to kind of connect you with others and, you know, how that works. And so that was really my strategy is deciding, okay, who are these people? Can I connect with them in that particular city? You know, can I have a coffee meeting? Can I, you know, come to your networking event or whatever the case may be? So it's really about reaching out and just saying, you know, even Facebook has been a great tool as well. It's like, hey, I'm going to be in, you know, specific groups. I'll be in this certain city and you can find certain groups. So you can say, hey, I'm going to be here for such and such a time. I'd love to connect with, you know, a couple of people. This is kind of what I do type thing. So yeah, you have to be very forward. You have to be sort of outgoing. You have to be able to commit to it as well. It's not just sort of a flash in the pan. It's like, it's not a holiday. It's working. But you have to sort of make those connections work as well. So that'd be my overall strategy is, yeah, find the people that are there that are in that industry or, you know, part of your niche or part of, you know, your potential audience that you typically work with and just sort of start talking with the people and you can't go there just for to make a sale. Like you might want to pitch your heart out, but unless you sort of built that relationship and built that trust, it's not going to happen. So you have to kind of go low and slow and get into the environment over time.
So who is your ideal customer at the end of the day?
It's typically like a professional services type client. It's mostly small business as well. So looking at it, it comes down more to a mentality or more to a behavior. It's like they have parts of their digital ecosystem in place, or they're looking to sort of build a more robust solution as well. And so they have, you know, most businesses do have websites and, you know, a Facebook page or a LinkedIn profile and that sort of thing. So it's really deciding, okay, let's take these pieces and let's make them work. Let's turn it into an actual business, right? Where you've got something tangible. You've got not just a fancy web page with a contact us form on it, but it's part of a business, right? And that's what a lot of businesses are missing.
Yeah. And so thinking about the last few years of the journey and the customers in the different places, have you found the customers in different countries very different?
Yes and no. I think sometimes I don't pick up all the cues, I'll be completely honest. But there is a difference in terms of their overall behavior. But at the end of the day, I would have to, and this is why I say yes and no, because as an entrepreneur, you're really thinking more sort of formally, structurally about your business. So it doesn't matter if you're, again, the CEO or a solopreneur or whatever. You're really thinking about the business and how you can make it better and how you can sort of connect with people. So I think that's I lost my train of thought there.
Oh, I was just asking about how the different customers are different. You know, are they different? Because you would think, okay, Australia, Canada, the States, if that's where most of them are, I know a lot of people would assume, okay, well, those are pretty much all culturally identical, but I'm guessing that's probably not quite the case.
Yeah, no, there definitely is some cultural differences, but again, yeah, it comes back to the entrepreneurs, the business people. Yeah. There is sort of that significant culture behind that you do find around the world as well. So yes, you're absolutely right. Like Australia, US, Canada. I mean, yeah, the cultures are whatever, 80% the same. not that they would admit that, but
give me an example, because you're Canadian. So if you're working, what's the difference? Let's take Australian clients and American clients. Give me an example of how those two might be different in maybe what they expect or how they relate to you, or, you know, how does that difference show up?
It usually shows up in, I guess, more of the way that they do business as well. So, a lot of talk about the U.S. is that they're very, you know, gung-ho, they're very into it, they're very, you know, let's get this job done. I do find that very similar, though, to a lot of Australians. Canadians are a little bit more laid back, most of them, but again, I don't like to put people in buckets. So could there be a difference? I think it honestly depends on the person themselves, quite honestly. Like the cultural differences, yeah, they are a little bit different, so you have to identify, you know, the specific words and the specific language that you use in particular circumstance or whatever, because it is different, and they will notice, you know, those differences in terminology that you use as well. So it's really a tough one. I would love to be like an anthropologist and sort of, you know, study the cultural side of it, because I think there's a lot there, and I'm probably, you know, whitewashing most of it, because I don't really see those high points and those low points, because again, I'm, you know, focused on sort of that business side, and at the end of the day, that's really what people want to talk about, is how will it affect my business. So yeah. I mean, it comes down to your audience too, their audience specifically as well. It's like, is a podcast different in, you know, the US and Australia? To some extent. I mean, fundamentally it's the same. It's how do you address those issues? How do you actually connect with people? You know, yeah. those types of things. So there is some subtle differences, but I think coming from the common language of business and entrepreneurship, we kind of know that this is what's expected. Like I have no idea what the cultural, you know, and business significance would be in, you know, someplace like China, or Eastern Europe, or, you know, whatever the case may be, because there would be a significant difference. And it's important. It's really important to identify that. So yeah, I've kind of taken the, maybe not the easy route, but you know, it's, I know that in the majority of cases, it's going to be fairly similar.
Do you work with any people that are outside those three geographies that we've talked about, or are they all Australian, Canadian, and American?
Yeah, primarily Australian, American, and Canadian. So occasionally into the UK, and that's about it. But one of the fascinating things too of having a global business is in fact knowing maybe they're not a client or a prospect, but they become a mentor and a friend and that sort of thing from other parts of the world, not just your Canada, US and Australia triangle type thing. So that's been sort of the most exciting thing about even living in Australia, for example, where culturally you have the opportunity to connect with so many different people from so many different countries. And, they talk about Canada being a melting pot of cultures and ethnicities and that sort of thing. But to me, that's why maybe this is sort of to answer your cultural question. To me, that's significantly different because in Canada, it's not quite as vibrant, I guess. When I moved to Australia, and in the business and agency community, I was meeting people from all over the world, from South Africa and London and places in Europe and South America. And it was nonstop. And I was so excited because I didn't really get a lot of that in Canada, despite what, there are obviously cultural groups, but maybe that's, one of those significant things is that I think the cultural groups in Canada are a little bit tighter, whereas here it's you see all walks of life, and I really enjoyed it because of that as well.
So over the last 5 years, you've taken the business from Sydney into the international space. Looking back with that benefit of hindsight, is there anything that you would have done differently as you actually internationalized? If you could start again and do the last 5 years again, is there anything different that you would have done on that international journey?
Yeah, well, because again, hindsight is 2020, as they say. So I've sort of, over time, I've developed this process, this methodology that this sort of makes it a little bit easier each time you do it. So I think going back, it would have been nice if somebody taught me how to do that or showed me or demonstrated, what it was that I needed to know and how to set these things up and, how to put these pieces in place. Cause again, we talk about being a digital world, but it's not even close to that yet. No, and it probably won't get there. You still need a lot of humanity, and that's where connecting with people directly is very important. But how do you connect with somebody in New York and how that you've never met before? And you might think it's easy, but it's not, and it takes a lot of work. So I think just sort of going through that process of defining, what it is that you want to achieve and looking at, again, comes down to the people who do you want to talk to? Who do you feel could be one of those people who can connect you with others? Or how do you, who can you talk to kind of get a conversation going? And don't look at it as sort of a business pitch, because again, you're not going to, you have to build a relationship for sales, right? So you're not going to have a sales pitch on kind of your first meeting. So you kind of have to throw that out the door. But it's more, how do you build that relationship with somebody so that you can, talk with them, the first time, the second time, the third time type thing, and see, maybe they won't become a customer, but maybe they can become a great partner, or maybe they can become a great referral partner, or something like that. So it's really understand to, you have to be on your feet about it, but to understand the people that are there and who you can, contact and connect with and all that good stuff.
Yeah. I want to ask you now a bit about Doyle the Entrepreneur. So what is it that motivates you? What's the thing that gets you out of bed to face up to being an international business owner every day? Because some days it can be a pretty, pretty big call.
I guess it's trying to do my part. I guess that would probably be the best way of describing it. It's like, what can I mean, that's really what got me started into business. 15 plus years ago was what can I do my part to sort of help the world along, right? Yeah, you can just, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you can get a, you know, a job in a business and do your job and blah, 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 that sort of thing, go home and away you go. But to me, the motivation is what else can you do and how else can you do it? And I think that that's sort of been the key motivator for me. It's like, what can you do? How can you do it? I mean, going back when I was in the initial stages of the business, I did like a lot of testing in retail environments and that sort of thing. And to me, it's more than just sort of selling, right? I mean, a lot of people can sell, some people can't. I'm kind of in between. But the fact is that I didn't want to create a business just to sell stuff, right? I wanted to be able to create a business that can actually add some value, that can actually make a difference in other people's lives, whether it's business to business or business to consumer, that sort of thing. So that's always been my driver to say, how do we actually make this better? How do we, you know, improve the process? How do we make something different? So yeah, it's a matter of, you know, scaling back and saying, well, what can I do differently? You don't have to necessarily say I'm going to change the world, but it can be, you know, what do I need to do to do something significant, I guess. So
and when you're facing
therapy session.
Therapy session, I love it. Now, because you're an entrepreneur and because you're in the international business space, it's pretty much a lead pipe lock that, you know, from time to time, you're going to have some difficult situations pop up. What strategies have you developed for dealing with hard times? So, you know, when you have a really bad day and you come back and you think, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? Or, you know, equivalent, what do you actually do to get yourself out of that headspace and back into the headspace which says, I'm an international business owner and I've got this?
Take a nap. Just kidding. Because no. But a lot of times it is, I mean, because the time zones are shifting. So it's like you're either up really early sometimes or up like pretty darn late as well. So it's about managing your time. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes into. It's like, how do you actually manage that time? And are you well rested? That said, like you kind of have to go with the flow as well. So you have to be able to say, okay, well, this is a priority. The thing that you need to avoid, and that I've really, you know, become acutely aware of, is that, again, because of time is your biggest friend, and it's also your biggest enemy as well, because when you have international customers, if you miss a window by like 2 or 3 hours, that then converts into another 24 plus hours. Like it's not the afternoon, it's the next day, right? So you have to be acutely aware of, you know, these timings, which has to be like absolutely super important. So that's kind of one of the things that I look at is how does what we do now affect the time so that the customer gets results when it's appropriate for them, right?
Yeah.
Because I've heard and I've experienced even, you know, some suppliers that I use occasionally that, oh, well, I work from 9 to 5 and, you know, if you email me at 5:10, I'm not going to be there. And it's like, well, sorry, I'm not going to work with you then. Like, you know, I need some flexibility here, and I'm not saying I demand it, but that's important. You can't kind of get, keep things rolling. You have to keep that momentum. Did that answer your question?
Kind of.
I think I kind of rambled.
Well, I was going to ask, have you got some kind of daily routine that keeps you, you know, focused and stable and rested, seeing you're bouncing around the world? I mean, is there kind of, do you set all your days up in a similar way so that you can actually manage that, or how does that work?
I try to segment things that I do, but I find it, it's obviously a challenge at times, but what I've gotten into the habit of is keeping a journal, like a business journal of keeping the activities. I try to use tools that allow for that timelessness of it, so that I can be connecting with anybody on my team at any time around the day, around the world, that sort of thing. So I become reliant on these tools that allow for that sort of connection and that communication as well. So it is kind of hard to sort of segment it specifically, but, you know, prioritization, I use like these giant sticky notes because I can remember them and they can go on the wall and away I go, and it's like, oh yeah, I got to do that.
I like that. I don't think I've heard anybody using giant sticky notes before, but we're recording we're recording it over Zoom, and Doyle is just holding one up for me. And I have to say, it is pretty large. So that's pretty cool. I do like that.
I even have a bigger one because you lose sticky notes, and you know, if they're the small ones, they're not big enough to write on. So
that's true. So but, I wonder go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think one of the habits that I do have is having a business journal as well. So, and I'm on Zoom, but I'm showing you my business journal, and I've got like, you know, 24 of these books that they actually convert the notes into a PDF as well. So I can connect with them with my notes. If I have to pull up an old file, I can just load up the program, and it's actually LiveScribe, and pull up my old notes and see if, you know, that's what I did say or not.
So is that the pen that stores the notes or the book?
It's a combination of it has special paper and records the writing, and then it converts it to a PDF, so you can use it in OneNote or whatever. So yeah, because that helps you stay organized, because it's like I said, you could just put it on a ton of different sticky notes. I know, you know, some people do that, but it's like, if you centralize it, put it into your book, you know, you can go back to it and say, okay, this is what I said I was going to do, or this is how I was going to do it, or this was about the conversation, that sort of thing. But even then, like, I don't write everything down. You know, sometimes you forget, or it's like, oh yeah, I'll remember that. But it's important to kind of try to see how you can simplify those activities, because you do have it coming from all around, like 24 hours email. Like people say, shut off your email if you want to be productive. I can't do that, because you do have emails coming in at different times of the day. So, you know, you have to be acutely aware of that time factor gain. So
talking about books, because we've just talked about the business journal, thinking about literary books, have you got some favorite books that have inspired you on the international journey? I mean, they could be fiction, they could be nonfiction, but have you got a couple of favorites?
Yeah, I'm just looking at my book list. This is why I travel as well, because you can find very unique things. And this is a book called The Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. Uh-huh. And he had the philosophy of what's called Stoicism. Basically, anything that can happen, it's like Murphy's Law. Anything that can happen will happen. But The Obstacle is the Way was a recent version of it by Ryan Holiday. Basically, taking a look at the obstacle. Pardon me. Excuse me. The challenge of overcoming a challenge is the challenge itself, right? So it's very existential, very sort of internal facing as well. So actually, anyway, I found this book in Montreal, Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius was a Roman emperor who wrote this whole philosophy, or not wrote it, but sort of brought it into the public discourse. And this copy was from 1879, and there's like, 1896 as well. And so I found this because the work, if you go through the philosophy, it's really quite fascinating, because it does allow you to say, you know what, this is bloody hard, but it's sort of more your attitude towards it and seeing that as, okay, well, I need to overcome this. How do I actually overcome that? So it's a fascinating read, and I truly enjoyed it as well. So
The Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. We'll put it onto the show notes, so with a link, so people can go check that out.
Yeah. Well, the modern version is called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. He's a marketing writer and does some philosophy as well. So the meditations are very deep, and it's hard to sort of put them into a tangible context because the way they spoke back then was obviously a little bit different. Whereas The Obstacle is the Way, that's sort of one of those, it's a modern writer. He's, you know, very affluent in writing and that sort of thing. So it's a bit better version, but anyway.
Now, Doyle, you not only love to read, but you also like to write. And the first book was The Digital Delusion. Tell me about your new book that you've just launched in New York.
Yeah, it's called Breakthrough, Unleash Your Remarkable Brand Value, Influence, and Authority. And I have to look at the cover to remember all those words. But what it is basically looking at, again, my focus is how do you actually formulate a digital strategy? And to me, that's the number one starting point for most businesses. Because as I said earlier, anybody can start a business online. The barrier to entry, there is no barrier to entry, right? You can create a website on your own, pay $5 or even free nowadays. So it's really important. How do you build a sound strategic architecture is what I call it. And how do you actually put these pieces together? And what I did was I created a digital workflow to say, okay, can you put it in these buckets, right? Digital is pretty big, and you know, obviously there's online and offline and in real life and online and that sort of thing. So it's important to say, how do you simplify things with your business? And if you can put it into a workflow to say, okay, well, what bucket does it fit in, really? It makes it so much easier, because it's like a big sigh of relief to say, okay, well, now I know which bucket. It's not worrying about SEO and Facebook and Twitter and, you know, designing and videos and live and funnels and ebooks and all that kind of stuff, right? It's like, no wonder everybody's so confused. It's because there's no compartment to put it in. And then my engineering brain takes over. And so what I did was created these seven buckets to say, well, does it fit into each one of these? 99% of the time it's going to. I mean, yes, there's sometimes where it doesn't, but that's, you know, the exception type thing. So, you know, what are these buckets and how do they actually help you with work? And so all of our projects, we which bucket does it fit in? And is it one of the seven buckets? And then you can decide, well, how do you actually do it? How do you complete it? How do you, you know, continue it as well?
And how does the book relate to your podcast? You've got a podcast as well. Just tell us, is there a direct link between those two things?
The podcast is a bit of an aside. Like, the podcast is sort of, I guess, a strategic look at, influencers from around the world who are, you know, doing things a bit differently as well. So, it's called Breaking Digital Podcast. And yeah, it's obviously I'm trying to connect the pieces of digital, and I don't have all the answers, right? I'll be perfectly honest there. And I don't think anybody does, but what I'm saying is that allows you to sort of, you know, similar to this podcast, get in touch with other people who are in the industry, who are sharing similar thoughts and ideas and that sort of thing, and see how they're doing it, right? What ideas and inspirations can you get from them? And it's been a fantastic journey, because I've met, you know, I was actually looking at this, this marketing report, Brand 24, is like a social listening platform, and they produce this yearly report, and it's top 100 digital marketing influencers from around the world. And as much as I'd love to be on that list, I'm not. But when I looked at it, it's like I'm 101. No, just kidding. I'm way down the list. I have no idea. But anyway, I was looking at this top 100, and I've actually interviewed like probably about 10 of these top 100 people. And it's like, well, the amount of influence that they have and their ideas and their insights of, you know, how they do business and that sort of thing. To me, it's a fascinating way of talking with these people. It's a great conversation starter to say, you know, what's new in the industry and how do you look at things, and, you know, how could other businesses look at other things as well? So it's meant to be, how do you connect these people, these digital influencers from around the world, so that other people can listen in and see if it's helpful to them. So
we're going to put the links to both the book and Doyle's podcast onto the show notes, so that if you want to check those out, you can do that. Doyle, what is next for the Digital Delusion? Where are you going from here?
Well, it's funny you should ask. yeah, we're actually doing a rebrand coming out very, very soon. So we're looking at sort of creating more of a digital strategy that corresponds to, you know, we talk a lot about transformation, but it's really about fundamentally understanding, you know, what tools you need and that sort of thing. So it's really about how do you actually connect those people to these platforms, and how do you build these strong platforms, and how do you create that value, and how do you, you know, build that sustainability along the way? So shifting from just sort of an agency level model of, you know, providing, or an anti-agency, as I said earlier, to more of a value-based consultancy type activity, where it's like we'll be taking them through that whole journey of digital transformation, build, how do you build trust online, how do you build sort of that core value that is so important in the digital business. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. So,
and if people want to get in touch with you, how should they find you?
Honestly, you can Google me, Doyle Bueller. I'm the only Doyle Bueller in the world.
That makes it pretty easy.
Yeah, Doyle Bueller, or just, you know, find me on LinkedIn, and happy to chat and happy to answer any questions about business or entrepreneurship, or where, what the best restaurant in a certain city is as well. So,
and do you have any final thoughts for entrepreneurs and business owners who are listening to this chat that we've had, and who are thinking, I wonder if I can do this? Like, can I really take my business global? What would you say to those people?
I would say absolutely, right? But you have to decide if that's something that your business will support as well. Pardon me. And I mean, you're in the market of international business, so you have your eyes and radar out for those businesses that fit that niche, right? It's not every business that can go global for whatever reason. I mean, yeah, cafes and restaurants and that sort of thing, which are the obvious ones. But absolutely, like even the life experience that you gain from even just looking at it, investigating it, maybe you don't actually go forward with it, but just to see, well, what's possible. And to me, that's the whole, you know, entrepreneur mindset is what is possible in doing these things. And that's, to me, the difference between being a business owner and an entrepreneur, in my mind, is you're looking at that. You're looking at the opportunities. You're looking at the possibilities. You're looking at, you know, what if? What if? What could I do? What if I did this? And to me, that's such a huge opportunity when you think about it. Even if it is just an online business, right? Like, why not? Why wouldn't you want to connect with people from around the world? Why wouldn't you want to connect from, you know, businesses around the globe, even if you don't necessarily have to be there, but you can. The tools are there. This thing called the internet, even though it was down all across WA this morning and we couldn't connect, but hey.
But we got there.
We got there. So look at that as an opportunity. It's like, what can I do? How do I actually do that? And the rewards, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. Like, you know that. I know that. You know, it's even with all these tools, with all these platforms available, it's like you still have to do the work. You still have to put in the effort. It's not going to come easy. It's going to be tough. But it's worth it in the end.
It's a wild ride. Doyle, it has been fantastic to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming along, despite the lack of internet in WA this morning. I'm really glad that you could get online, and I have really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic, Cynthia. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Hey everyone, if you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, you might want to check out the International Business Accelerator, which is something I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of internationalization. The International Business Accelerator, or as we like to call it, the IBA, is a program built on the three principles of skills and knowledge, mentoring and accountability, and community. I built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and are wondering where to start. The program is structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital, so you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun, and our members love it. So if that's you, if you're thinking about going global, check it out at internationalbusinessaccelerator.com.